Live from the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's current sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a sorry receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shut fake one time.
We're talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cat.
Here's your host, Al Martin.
What's up, everybody? My name is Ian Hawley. I'm filling in for Al Martin today. He was supposed to be back with you on WKAR's Current Sports, but sadly his flight was delayed. So I am here filling in once again. Had a variety of fill-in hosts this week, notably Jack Kerwin, who did a great job the past few days, and Connor Mathis, who is now engineering behind the board for me. And Alec Rio has been in studio as well, helping out a lot behind the scenes. So we're glad that we can be here with you on this Friday afternoon for another edition of Current Sports. We got a lot to talk about today. We'll bring you more coverage on the Urban Meyer controversy, specifically Mark D'Antonio declining to comment on the controversy yesterday after the Spartans' first practice. We'll also talk about the AP coaches poll that was released the other day. In that poll, Michigan State is ranked 12th out of 25, and Michigan is ranked 14th. So I'll give you my thoughts on that, whether the Spartans and the Wolverines deserve to be higher or lower than they're ranked. We'll also bring in a piece from NPR's Elsa Chang and Bill Rabinowitz. They've done a piece on the Urban Meyer controversy, so we'll play that for you. And we'll also talk about EA Sports and Madden 19. They chose to eliminate Colin Kaepernick's name from one of the songs on the soundtrack, and that caused some controversy all over the internet yesterday. EA Sports has since issued a statement apologizing, but we'll bring you more information on that, and I'll give you my thoughts on that whole thing. I will also bring to you Reflection Friday, where we reflect on our favorite sports moments of the week. All that and more here on WKAR's Current Sports on AM 870, 105.1 FM. You can also listen on WKAR.org if you can't make it to a radio. And sadly, we don't have the live stream up and running today. My phone just died, and I forgot to bring my charger, so that's on me. But we will be here on the normal radio stations as well as WKAR.org, so please make it over there if you can't get to the radio for the entire hour. Lots to talk about today. Let's get to it. Here's your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners. All right, we start with Michigan State football today. Senior cornerback Tyson Smith is done for the season and possibly his football career after suffering a medical setback.
He'll be out here like we have done with all of our other players. He'll have some kind of role within our program to keep him involved. Right now we'll have him working as a student assistant with the defensive backs, but he may be working in recruiting or in the weight room, but we want to keep our guys involved and make sure that they have great experience at Michigan State. Right now he's out for the season.
Is there some sadness on your behalf?
Yeah, you know, I mean, he's a guy that worked hard to get back last year, and then, upon further examination, there were some things that he had to be able to do, I guess, from a physical, from a health standpoint. So, but it's tough when guys you know, lose their dreams a little bit, but he's played for us. He started for us. He's a guy that's been on the field. So he's got that to carry him through his life, and he's had a great experience here in that area. So he'll just move on to other areas of his life.
That was the voice of Mark D'Antonio you just heard commenting on Tyson Smith's situation after Michigan State's first practice yesterday. Smith made a remarkable comeback last season after suffering a stroke at the end of the 2016 year. The 5'11", 170-pound Southfield native returned last fall and had a 38-yard interception return for a touchdown in his first game back in the season opener against Bowling Green last year. Smith went on to play in all 13 games, starting at cornerback against Maryland, and finished with two tackles and a fumble recovery. So we here at Current Sports would like to wish Tyson Smith the best of luck in whatever he decides to pursue from here, whether it be football or otherwise. The Moneyball Pro-Am Championship was a thriller for sure. A neck-and-neck game throughout the whole contest led to MSU Impact freshman center Aaron Henry sinking the game winner in double overtime to win the game for Team Definition over Team Showtime. Folks, if you missed Aaron Henry, I'm sorry. I feel bad for you. He was phenomenal throughout this Moneyball Pro-Am Summer League. Debatably the best Michigan State freshman who made an impact for his team in that league, and I'm certainly looking forward to big things from him this upcoming season. It's about time we aren't slept on in a poll. Michigan State, coming off a 10-3 campaign, is rated 12th in the AP coaches poll, while Michigan, who was 8-5 last season, is ranked 14th in the first Amway coaches poll, released yesterday afternoon. To absolutely nobody's surprise, defending national champion Alabama is ranked number one in the nation in college football. Less than 24 hours after Ohio State put Urban Meyer on administrative leave while it investigates allegations the coach did not report domestic violence situations involving a former assistant coach, Michigan State coach Mark D'Antonio hesitated to answer questions about the situation.
Domestic abuse is a very serious issue in today's society, but I also think that it would be inappropriate for me to talk about that at this time.
That was Mark D'Antonio again commenting on the Urban Meyer situation that's developing at Ohio State. John Reschke was greeted with a new number and a lot of new faces in his return to Michigan State's football team Thursday. The sixth-year senior, who was reinstated by Coach Mark D'Antonio after leaving the program following a racist text message in early 2017, worked with the linebackers during the Spartans' opening practice for the 2018 season. Reschke looked good, D'Antonio said after practice, but we're in shorts and we're rotating four different groups in there, so they're getting minimum opportunities. Apparently, Thompson was still upset about all of that as late as the middle of July. This is Tristan Thompson, upset about Draymond Green and the words they exchanged in the middle of July. According to a report from Marcus Thompson, he tried to fight Draymond Green at an ESPYs after party in Los Angeles. We knew Green wouldn't be able to keep quiet for long, and he posted a retort on his Instagram story on Wednesday in which he called the reports inaccurate and came up with a sick burn for the city of Cleveland. Some Cavs fans were reportedly planning a parade for Thompson after reports of the punch, so Green initially told the fans to cancel it. Then in the next segment of the story, he hit them with the zinger. I've enjoyed y'all's stories and talk shows over the past couple days. Let them joints inaccurate, though, G. All right, carry on, my good people. They may want to cancel that parade, too. Then he went on to say, nah, keep the parade. That city won't have any for a while. I forgot LeBron left. And then he kind of gave the shrugging shoulders emoji, like the Jordan shrug. So big words there from Draymond Green towards Tristan Thompson as the smack talk continues. EA's Madden 19 doesn't come out for another week, but it's already in the news for all the wrong reasons. Yesterday it surfaced that on the soundtrack of this year's installment, polarizing QB Colin Kaepernick's name was censored out of a Big Sean song. Big Sean took to Twitter to voice his frustrations, saying, quote, "It's disappointing and appalling that the NFL and EA took Colin Kaepernick's name out of my verse on Big Bank for Madden 19 like it was a curse word. When he's not a curse, he's a gift. Nobody from my team approved any of this." Now, earlier today, EA apologized in a statement on Twitter, saying, quote, "We made an unfortunate mistake with our Madden NFL soundtrack. Members of our team misunderstood the fact that while we don't have rights to include Colin Kaepernick in the game, this doesn't affect our soundtracks. We messed up, and the edit should never have happened. We will make it right with an update to Madden NFL 19 on August 6th that will include the reference again. We meant no disrespect, and we apologize to Colin, to YG, and Big Sean, to the NFL, to all of their fans, and our players for this mistake." Moving on, football made its return last night as the Baltimore Ravens defeated the Chicago Bears 17-16 in the Hall of Fame game. All eyes were on rookie QB Lamar Jackson as he took the field for the first time. Jackson completed 4 of 10 passes for 33 yards, 1 touchdown, and 1 interception during the game. He added 24 rushing yards on 4 carries. We also got a first look at the NFL's new targeting rule, and it already appears that the rule may prove to be an issue for teams come the regular season. The new penalty was called 4 times in last night's game. All right, that does it for your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in and share your thoughts on any of those, please call at 517-355-WKAR. That's 517-355-9527. And share with us what's on your mind. You can also go to Twitter and tweet us at WKAR_sports. You can go to Facebook.com/WKAR News and leave your comments there, and we'll do our best to get to them. Tweet me directly at Ian Hawley, WKAR. My last name is Hawley. I'll do my best to respond to your tweets there. But we got a lot to talk about today, so we're going to keep going here. Let's start the show. We'll start off in the world of college football, as most of the news from the sports world has been breaking from there lately. With the start of the college football season rapidly approaching, I believe we have something like 29 days left until the season kicks off. Something like that. But we're going to start with the coaches poll that just came out. The first college coaches poll of the 2018 college football season. I'm going to read to you, I guess, the top 15, since that's what concerns us here at Current Sports in reference to Michigan State and Michigan. So the defending national champion Alabama is ranked number 1. Clemson comes in at 2. Ohio State at 3. Georgia is number 4. Oklahoma is number 5. Washington at 6. Wisconsin is 7. Miami at 8. Penn State at 9, Auburn is ranked 10th, Notre Dame is number 11, Michigan State is 12, Stanford comes in at 13, the University of Michigan comes in at 14, and USC rounds out the top 15, and that would be the Southern California Trojans, not the South Carolina Gamecocks, just to prevent any confusion. I don't really have too much on this poll, other than to say that, you know, generally in, early on in the season, the polls really don't matter. The first one that ultimately matters is the College Football Playoff Selection Committee's first poll that they put out on the first Sunday in December. That poll, as you, I'm sure you know, determines who makes the college football playoff and the New Year's Six bowls. The committee puts out weekly rankings for a month before that, but even those aren't really binding in any way, as teams can leapfrog each other at the committee's behest. Until the committee rankings start coming out around Halloween, the gold standard of the polls is the AP poll. That media ranking is the one you'll see most commonly cited through about week 8 by, you know, most media outlets and the teams themselves. Unless some team is ranked higher in the coaches poll than in the AP poll, in which case that could flip. You know, the teams are going to try and prop themselves up as best they can, and I don't blame them. The preseason AP doesn't have much predictive value for the final rankings of the year. So, you know, not too much to pay attention to with these early polls. The coaches poll was run by USA Today and sponsored by Amway. You know, it gets a lot of hate for not really being a coaches poll. The majority of the voters in this poll are really team PR directors who sometimes wind up outing themselves as the true decision makers. So no, again, this poll is not really that important. The preseason coaches poll is extra unimportant if you're looking to put things on a scale. But the AP poll isn't out yet. Correct me for earlier saying that this was the AP poll. It's actually the Amway poll, so I apologize for that. And the playoff rankings, like I say, won't be out for some time. So I guess at this point, this is the most respected poll, but don't get too upset if your team is ranked higher or lower than where you want them to be, or your rival is ranked higher than you want them to be, because it will all come out in the wash eventually. But like I say, Alabama ranked at number one. I don't have a problem with that. Alabama was phenomenal in the football playoff last year. Despite the controversy for them getting into the playoff, they ended up winning the national championship. So what can you really say at that point? Nick Saban's done it again, much to my dismay and the dismay of many others around the country. But, you know, we're going to leave that one alone for now because I think Alabama deserves the top spot. Clemson comes in at number two. Again, no surprise there. They've been right at the top of the leaderboards in college football for the past few years. Notably playing championship games against Alabama in a Warriors-Cavs-style repetitious final throughout the past few years. Ohio State is number three. I don't have any problem with this. You know, they were fantastic last year. I think they're the favorite to win the Big Ten again this year, although not by as much as some people might think, but that's a debate for another time. Georgia at number four. I don't see any significant drop-off for Georgia this year. They're going to reload at all the positions that they lost players from last year, as big-time SEC programs usually do. So I think Georgia is a good pick for number four. Oklahoma, I don't really know about Oklahoma. To be quite honest with you, I haven't done much in-depth research into the positions that they lost, but Baker Mayfield, I'm sure, is going to make a huge hole in the quarterback spot as far as experience goes, as far as poise under pressure goes. Whoever they bring in to replace him is going to have some big shoes to fill. So it'll be interesting to see if Oklahoma is really deserving of that number five preseason ranking. I don't think there will be too much of a drop-off. I don't expect them to fall out of the polls by any means, but Oklahoma is going to have some ground to catch up on at the quarterback spot for sure this season. Washington at number six. I like that. Washington's kind of the sleeper from the Pac-12 that most people don't really think about off the top of their head when they think of big-time college football. But, I mean, Washington's another one of those teams like Clemson, like Ohio State, like Alabama, like Oklahoma that's right there in contention every year. And maybe that's a result of the Pac-12 being the least powerful of the Power 5 conferences, in my opinion at least, from top to bottom. But, you know, I mean, if you keep winning and you keep finding your way up there, then again, me, what can I really say? So I like the Washington pick at number six. I think they could find themselves in the college football playoff conversation again at the end of the season as they have the past few seasons, because they're very consistent in the talent that they recruit. You know, much the same to Mark D'Antonio. He tries to fit players that will not only fit his system, but fit the mentality of the school and the attitude that they like to have in the program. Washington does the same kind of thing. So I don't see Washington falling out of the polls. But, you know, with teams like USC and UCLA kind of in a reloading phase, at least for their quarterbacks, I think the Pac-12 is wide open for Washington to take it this year. Wisconsin at number 7. Again, I don't have any problem with that. You know, they're really the only team in the Big Ten West that has a chance of beating Ohio State on a year-to-year basis, or Michigan State or Penn State or whoever the winner may be coming out of the East. Iowa, I don't think, will be on the same level as Wisconsin this year, although they're getting there. Give it a couple more years for Iowa to really be a big contender again in the Big Ten like they have been in the past few years. Minnesota, you know, props to PJ Fleck and what he's been doing over there, but I don't think they're on the same level as the rest of the top Big Ten contenders this year. And same thing with Nebraska. Scott Frost is going to have a lot of work to do before he can turn them into a competitive team trying to win the Big Ten West. So again, Wisconsin really has their work cut out for them, and it's not a lot in the Big Ten West. So again, I have no problem with Wisconsin being up there. Miami at number 8. I was high on Miami towards the end of the season last year, but they really fizzled out over the last couple of games that they played. The turnover chain did not really work in their favor at some times. But I think they'll use those last couple games as learning experiences, especially their final game of the season, that loss that they had. I think they'll rebound really well from that, because it seems like they've got their program going in the right direction. Now we get down to the second Big Ten team on this list, or the third, excuse me, Big Ten team on this list, the second from the Big Ten East, and that would be Penn State. James Franklin, as I'm sure you know, you Michigan State fans and Michigan fans know, has been doing a phenomenal job over at Penn State of recruiting, and again, fitting the guys into his system that he thinks will have the right mentality and the right skill set for his program. So I have no problems with Penn State being there. I don't really have a lot of problems with a lot of this list. Spoiler alert. Auburn, I think, is too low. They kept Jared Stidham at the quarterback position, and they'll return a lot of starters on both sides of the ball. So I'm not sure why Auburn has the drop-off that it did. Auburn was in contention for the college football playoff last year. Sadly, they did not make it in. I would have liked to see, you know, pretty much anybody make it in over the University of Alabama. But Auburn did not make it in. I think they could be moved up on this list, probably as high as number 6, which is where Washington is. I don't think any of those teams above them deserve to be moved down into Auburn's place, but I do think Auburn is ranked too low on the list, comparative to what kind of starters they're bringing back. Notre Dame at number 11. To be quite honest with you, I try and keep my eyes off of Notre Dame as one of our hated rivals. I hate watching their football almost as much as I hate watching Alabama. But Notre Dame, I think they'll have a bounce back season this year. You know, they had a sputtering season like Michigan State did a couple years ago. Really, after we lost that game to them, their season kind of went downhill too, and they've been it's been a slower road for them recovering. Michigan State came back with the 10-3 season last year. Notre Dame didn't do as well, but you know, their program's moving in the right direction. I have no problem with this ranking of Notre Dame. I think they'll be good again this year. They don't have a conference that they compete in, but based on the usual rivalry games that they do play every year, I think they'll do fine with their schedule this year. Look for them to end up in the probably the 8-15 range at the end of the season. Now we get to Michigan State here at number 12. Looking at the rest of the list here, that's ranked above Michigan State, the 1-11 spots, again, I can't. It's kind of like Auburn, in my opinion. I feel like they're ranked too low for the amount of starters that they're returning on both sides of the ball. You know, the most starters back in the FBS this year, and the most important of those being L.J. Scott and Brian Lewerke. Felton Davis will be back this year for the Spartans. He was their top receiver last year. And, you know, on the defensive side of the ball, they only lost one linebacker, I believe, and now we lost one offensive lineman on the offensive side of the ball. So, you know, Michigan State ending up at number 12 at the end of the regular season, I don't see that being the case. I see them more in the, you know, the top five range, the top six range maybe. Maybe on the outside of the college football playoff looking in, depending on what happens with their rivalry games in the Big Ten East this year. And, of course, if they make it that far, the Big Ten championship game. But, again, I can't highlight another team that I would pull down to Michigan State's spot. You know, besides maybe Notre Dame, I would flip those. But I think they this poll is very well done as far as the top 10 teams. So I can't necessarily say that Michigan State should leapfrog some of these other schools, you know, especially like the top four of the poll, I think is a very good predictor of who might end up in the college football playoff again this year. It's good to see that we've finally gotten the respect that we deserve over the Michigan Wolverines, though, who end up at 14. Jim Harbaugh, as I'm sure you've heard, the almost famous reporter quote now in East Lansing, Jim Harbaugh has ended up at third place, and fourth place in his division over his first 3 years at the school down the road from us. He's also had multiple five-star recruits, you know, top 100 recruits in ESPN come to his program. A few of them have left by now for whatever reason. And he's 1-5 against his rivals in Michigan State and Ohio State. So maybe people around the college football world are finally starting to notice the flaws that Jim Harbaugh has and not so much prop him up on the merits of his past jobs. You know, at Stanford, he was lucky in having Andrew Luck as a great quarterback. Not sure too much how Jim Harbaugh and Andrew Luck had not sure how much Jim Harbaugh affected Andrew Luck and his quarterbacking prowess because Andrew Luck was really highly touted coming out of high school, at least in the area there. And, you know, he had success with the San Francisco 49ers. But it seems like as the time goes on, wherever Jim Harbaugh stays, the culture kind of starts to decline. You know, most recently with Michigan, there was the news coming out about Wilton Spate saying that Jim Harbaugh told him not to eat chicken because it was, quote, a nervous bird, and that he should instead eat pork and red meat, pork being, you know, probably one of the worst meats you could eat as far as fat content goes. But, you know, I'm not a health expert either. I don't think Jim Harbaugh is based on this statement, but I certainly am not one, so I can't really make any comments on that. I guess, Jim, you know, you do what you got to do. But In the medical world, you know, chicken is generally considered the leanest of the meats, and definitely more lean than pork, and it gives you the protein that you need, without all that fat content. So if it were me, I would have been saying, hey, eat more chicken. That's not a shameless Chick-fil-A plug, I promise. But, you know, again, do what you want, Jim. They're your players, not mine. But it seems like the culture in the locker room kind of starts to decline from a player to coach standpoint. You know, most notably with the 49ers, there were a lot of players that came out before and after Jim Harbaugh left there and said that they at least had some problems in their relationship with Harbaugh. Or, you know, they didn't respect the way he was coaching or his coaching philosophy. So I guess the media is kind of starting to be realistic with Harbaugh now in Michigan. You know, anytime Michigan State is ranked above Michigan in a football poll, something catastrophic has happened for one of the two schools, or, you know, in this situation, finally just being realistic. I do think that for the Michigan Wolverines, this is a pivotal year for Jim Harbaugh. I said that last year, but obviously I was wrong because really this is the first time we're starting to hear the complaints from the Michigan fan base itself. If Jim Harbaugh loses both of his games against his rivals this year, it would not be surprising to me if the school ended up firing him. If he loses Michigan State and Ohio State in, if it was close for those games, it wouldn't be as bad. But if he gets blown out in both of those games, it's going to be tough for the Michigan fan base to reconcile their anger with Harbaugh over the past few years. Although, to be fair, I do think Harbaugh takes a little bit too much flack at times. You know, the 1-5 record versus his rivals is kind of deceiving because, you know, had it not been for the last second play that Michigan State had over Michigan with the blocked punt return, they would have gone 11-2 that year. Again, there was a last minute play against Ohio State last year that caused them to lose that game. So Jim Harbaugh is very close to being, you know, 10-3, 11-2 consistently every year. It's just that stat against his rivals that people really like to use against him, which I think is fair in some respects, but it doesn't necessarily warrant his firing. However, if you can't get over the hump in year four, where most, if not all, of these players are guys that you've recruited, and it's now officially the system that you've built here at Michigan, there's really no more blaming it on past coaches and their system. If he can't get over that rivals hump this year and at least win one of those games, then it's gonna be tough for Michigan fans to keep him any longer than one more year. With Shea Patterson, anything is possible. We saw him play at Ole Miss a few seasons ago. He was fantastic. I'm really high on this guy. I think he will do wonders for the Michigan offensive system, who has really had inconsistencies at quarterback over the past few years. Last year, I think they had three starting quarterbacks throughout the season. The first two went down to injury. So now, if they can get some stability at the quarterback position, then that would work wonders for their offense. So I like these rankings. Again, if you want to go 10 through 15, again, it's Auburn at 10, Notre Dame at 11, Michigan State at 12, Stanford at 13, Michigan at 14, and 15 is USC. Just quickly for Stanford here, I think Bryce Love is going to be fantastic again for them this year. And then for USC, it's going to be interesting to see how they handle their quarterback situation. That's obviously the most glaring hole for them. But again, if they can, you know, kind of get the ship righted at the beginning of the season and work out all the kinks, then I think the Pac-12 is wide open again this year for, you know, either USC, Washington, maybe UCLA or Arizona State will surprise us. You can never count against Herm Edwards, but I don't see it necessarily happening this year for Arizona State, given it's Edwards' first year with the program. Let me know what you think about this this first poll for the college football playoff season. It's 517-355-9527 is the number to call if you'd like to call in and give us your thoughts today. Let's take our first break here. When we come back, we'll be talking more about the Urban Meyer controversy. Mark D'Antonio declined to comment. And we also have a piece from NPR's Alsa Chang and Bill Rabinowitz, detailing more on this developing controversy. You're listening to AM 870 WKAR. My name is Ian Hawley. We'll be right back. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. My name is Ian Hawley, and I'm filling in for Al Martin today, who's supposed to be back from the Big Apple, but his flight was delayed, sadly. So you're going to have to wait till Monday to hear Al's booming voice again. But for now, I'm joined by Alec Rio in the studio and Connor Mathis behind the glass, doing a wonderful job engineering for us so far. Just wrapped up a conversation about the coaches poll, really a monologue on my part. Michigan State is ranked 12th in the preseason coaches poll sponsored by Amway, and the University of Michigan comes in at 14th. Again, if you'd like to call in and give your thoughts on those rankings, please don't be shy. Our number is 517-355-WKAR. That's 517-355-9527. All right, so we've got some more content here, I guess, related to the developing Urban Meyer controversy at Ohio State. Mark D'Antonio declined to comment on the Urban Meyer controversy yesterday after Michigan State's practice. D'Antonio, I believe, is from the Urban Meyer coaching tree. Correct me if I'm wrong on that. But I think it was a very professional move on his part, and really the only move that he really could have made without, you know, drawing any ire from other fans or from reporters here in the beautiful world of sports media. D'Antonio, I think, handled it very well. You know, based on recent controversies that have been going on here at MSU, either, you know, the sexual assault scandals within the football and basketball programs, or alleged assaults, I guess, for some of those cases, or whether it be, you know, the horrible happenings with Larry Nassar here on MSU's campus and other places. I think Mark D'Antonio has learned in times of controversy that sometimes it's better to just keep your mouth shut until you've got all the facts straight, and kind of let the legal happenings proceed on their own rather than, you know, throw your name in the hat with a comment. So I have no problem with Mark D'Antonio not wanting to talk about that. He said that it would be inappropriate at this time to make a comment, and I agree. You know, Meyer is on paid administrative leave as of Wednesday. I believe that was the right call by the university to go ahead and suspend him indefinitely. And it doesn't feel like a punishment necessarily for Urban Meyer in that sense. You know, it doesn't feel harsh or anything like that. And Meyer came out and said that he agreed with the suspension because it would give his players and assistant coaches time to focus on their first practices of the season and, you know, getting ready for the regular season here in just about a month. If it does come out that Meyer was aware of the abuse reported by Zach Smith's wife, who said that she actually told Shelley Meyer, Urban's wife, of the abuse. If it does come out that Urban knew, you know, Shelley Meyer has never, you know, confirmed or denied that she told her husband of the abuse, and Zach Smith's wife also said in the interview that she could neither confirm nor deny whether or not Shelley Meyer had told her husband of the abuse. But if it does come out that Urban was aware of this, I think he should be removed immediately. You know, there's the Title IX clause in his contract that says he's not only supposed to report any sexual harassment or abuse by a staff member or a player, but he's also supposed to report, you know, any crime that might have been committed. And if he doesn't do either of those things, then Ohio State has the right to terminate him basically immediately. I think he has the right to state his case to, I guess, the Board of Trustees in that case. But there is also another clause that says if Ohio State deems it was, you know, really heinous, his actions, then they can even waive that right from him and not let him testify at all. I don't think it will come to that, because Meyer is not necessarily the one accused of, you know, the initial wrongdoing. If it comes out that he knows, obviously there's some wrongdoing on his part, and I agree that he should be terminated. But Mark D'Antonio did the right thing here and said, hey, you know, I don't really know what's going on over there, but I'm just going to keep my mouth shut, and I'm going to focus on myself and my team for now, and I have no problem with that. Alec Rio joins me here in the studio. Alec, I know we've been covering this Ohio State controversy kind of ad nauseum here this week. So I understand if you don't have any new thoughts necessarily, but at least as far as Mark D'Antonio declining to comment, Do you think that was the right call or the wrong call?
I think it was the right call because as a coach, you have to act in a professional manner. And you can't say anything without the evidence being wholly there. And for right now, like, the text messages are out and stuff. And Mark D'Antonio is just saying, look, don't come to me for like questions related to this, because to be honest, he has no reason to speak up about something like this. Like in the position he's in as another coach in the Big Ten, there's just really nothing he can say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the risk reward factor there is not in D'Antonio's favor.
Exactly.
I mean, there's basically no reward for him giving a comment, and he's risking, you know, hurting his image at the very least with saying something about that before all the facts are present. So we have a piece here from NPR's Elsa Chang and Bill Rabanowitz about this Ohio State, scandal that's developing, I guess. Urban Meyer, again, the head football coach for Ohio State, was placed on indefinite administrative leave while they investigate if he knew about an alleged 2015 domestic violence incident between Zach Smith and his ex-wife. Zach Smith is one of his assistant coaches, or was one of his assistant coaches. I believe he's been fired by the university now. But NPR's Ailsa Chang speaks with Bill Rabanowitz, who is a Columbus Dispatch Buckeyes beat reporter.
When the Ohio State football team opens training camp tomorrow, the team's head coach, Urban Meyer, will not be there. The school has placed Meyer on administrative leave. It's looking into claims that he knew about domestic violence allegations against one of his former assistants and did nothing about it. Here to talk about this case is Bill Rabanowitz, who covers Ohio State football for the Columbus Dispatch. Welcome.
Hi, Elsa. Nice to be here.
So can you first lay out what we know has happened? The former assistant coach is Zach Smith, and his ex-wife has accused him of domestic violence.
Right. This kind of all started in May when Zach Smith appeared in court to face a criminal trespass case. It's misdemeanor. It didn't seem like a big deal. Obviously, it kind of exploded yesterday with Courtney Smith going public and saying that she told Shelley Meyer, Urban Meyer's wife, about this, and she believes that Urban Meyer knew about this. That would be a violation of Meyer's contract in terms of Title IX requirements to report such things. And so he was placed on administrative leave yesterday, and his status is subject to the investigation that's going to unfold now or soon.
And here's Courtney Smith, the ex-wife, speaking to the sports news site Stadium.
When somebody is crying out for help, I believe the coach, along with the coach's wife, have a duty. They have a duty to do something to help.
So what is Meyer saying in his defense?
Well, originally he said last week that he did not know about the 2015 incident. Again, Zach Smith was never charged in that, but that was the one that Courtney Smith said that she talked to Shelley Meyer about. Mm-hmm. There was also an incident in 2009 when both Meyer and Zach Smith and Courtney Smith were at Florida. And Urban Meyer says, yes, we talked and counseled them in 2009. I didn't know anything about 2015. Well, this stuff that Courtney Smith claimed with the text to Shelley Meyer happened in 2015. That was about that. So Urban Meyer has to have an explanation for that.
And while the football team is sort of dealing with these allegations, we should note that Ohio State is dealing with another growing scandal, the one involving allegations of sexual abuse by the wrestling team's former doctor. I mean, the campus is dealing with a lot right now.
So, yeah, Ohio State has been dealing with that investigation for months, and now they're going to have to deal with this investigation. It's not the best of times for Ohio State in terms of that stuff.
Well, when you're talking with football players and fans and students, how are they talking about all of this?
Well, honestly, I don't know, because there's now a media lockdown. Training camp starts tomorrow, and Ohio State just announced that they are not going to make players or coaches available, and that all practices for the time being will be closed. I'm not sure it's the wisest thing, because all that means is that people like me will not be able to write about the team. They'll be stuck with dealing with things like this probably more than they would have if there had been access to the team, but that's the choice Ohio State's made.
What is your sense of how this is all going to play out for Urban Meyer?
I will say that he is now in a situation that would have seemed unthinkable even 2 days ago, that Urban Meyer could be in serious jeopardy of losing his job. I mean, Ohio State, here's the thing about Ohio State. They have not had a coach who left voluntarily since Paul Brown in 1942. They've had legends coach Ohio State, Woody Hayes, Jim Tressel, John Cooper, Earl Bruce. None of them left of their own volition. They were all fired or forced out in some way. It looked like Urban Meyer would buck that trend, that he would be the one guy who would be able to go out on his terms. And now that's up in the air. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but it's certainly well within the realm of possibility.
Bill Rabinowitz covers Ohio State football for the Columbus Dispatch. Thank you.
Thank you, Elsa.
All right, so you just heard that report from NPR's Elsa Chang. She was interviewing Bill Rabinowitz of the Columbus Dispatch, and he is a Ohio State Buckeyes beat reporter there. Don't really have too much to add to that, so let's go ahead and hit our second break here. When we come back, we actually have a surprise guest. We have members of the Bike to Build. We have a Bike to Build here in studio. They engage young adults in service-oriented cycling trips to raise money and awareness for the affordable housing cause. So we have that and a lot more after this break. You're listening to WKAR's Current Sports. All right, we are back here on WKAR's Current Sports. You're listening to AM 870 and 105.1 FM. My name is Ian Hawley, filling in for Al Martin here today on this beautiful Friday afternoon. We have two members of the Bike to Build philanthropy here in studio with us today. They engage young adults in service-oriented cycling trips to raise money and awareness for the affordable housing cause. It is a once-in-a-lifetime experience that fosters a sustained connection to community, and they advocate for the need for affordable housing in thousands of communities across the country. So, please state your names for the jury, and tell us a little bit about yourselves.
Hi, I'm Elquin Lincoln Keon. I'm the executive director of Habitat for Humanity. We're in Clinton and Gratiot County, so just a smidgen north of here.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been with Habitat since 2000, so I'm 18 years into helping people achieve homeownership that probably would never have the opportunity otherwise other than Habitat. So, but we not only build houses, but we also do minor repairs and build wheelchair ramps and things like that to help people stay in their houses. Mm-hmm. So adds that stability.
I actually volunteered for Habitat for Humanity when I was in high school. We had to do, you know, so many service hours to be able to graduate. And that was actually a really fun way to, you know, kind of give back to the community. Mm-hmm. I'm from Alabama originally, and there were a lot of places in the area that were affected by Hurricane Katrina pretty severely.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really nice to see, you know, positive change in affected areas of the state and to be able to give back to people in our community and kind of help them out with their housing situation a little
bit.
And yes, we also have another guest here in our studio today.
Hello, my name is Morgan Schwenke. I'm the event coordinator intern for the Clinton Gratiot Habitat for Humanity. I have been starting my position since the summer, so I've been working since May, and I will also be continuing the position into the fall as well.
Oh, very nice, very nice. So, again, for those of the our listeners who don't know about Bike to Build specifically, can you tell us a little bit about the program?
This is our eighth year, and our big tagline is, you bike, we build. So basically, you come in, you know, you can register the day of, you can go to our website, habitatclinton.org, and pre-register, or you can come the day of, which is tomorrow, coming up fast. So come out. Every every ounce of, or every amount that you, you know, the, your entrance fee, whatever you're doing, buying t-shirts, you know, whatever, helps us build houses, helps us build wheelchair ramps, helps us do those minor repairs. So that's one of the cool things. You bike, we build. You get to do something that you love, and we get to do something that makes a difference in the community.
Well, there you go. How did this event start, either specifically here in Michigan or nationwide?
It actually started here in Michigan. Okay. There are other bike events that different habitats have. It actually started Habitat. We are now Clinton Gratiot Habitat. Originally, we were just Habitat Clinton, and we actually partnered with Habitat Lansing. There were some people on board in the staff and in the offices who said, hey, let's do a bike ride. That would be really kind of fun. And so now Habitat Lansing has decided they don't want to be part of that anymore. They have their own different things that they're doing. And we said, we really like this event. It's kind of fun. It's also a great training experience for people who are considering doing the Delmac, because we have rides of 20, 40, 50, or 80. Is that right?
Yes, that's right.
All right. I had to make sure. Miles. So if you're training, if you want to do the Delmac, this is 1 month ahead of Delmac. This is a great opportunity to do that. Plus, I have to say this, we have the best rest stops in the universe. We partner with local churches, and so we have homemade cookies, we have water, we have refreshments, we have everything. Decent bathrooms.
Let me say that. Decent bathrooms.
It's one of the best things that we can do, and it allows us to have greater partnerships with people in Clinton and Gratiot County.
So how many people participate on a year-to-year basis, would you say, in the Bike for Build?
We have had as many as 200, approximately 200, over, just a, slightly over. We'd love to have 200 again. We had about 130, 140 last year. We would love to see 200 people come out. Whether you're riding for 20 miles or you're riding for 80 miles, it doesn't matter. We have SAG support, too. SAG is something aided guide. I'm not a bike rider.
Service aided guide,
something like that. So if, you know, if you get partway through and you go, I just can't do this, you can call the SAG driver and they'll come pick you up and bring you back.
Oh, that's nice. That would definitely be something
right,
for that someone
that's
like
what
me.
I would do. Wait, I thought I could do 50, yeah. But I guess I'm not going to. But anyway, so so it's kind of neat. And it's been a wonderful opportunity for people to be able to ride. Every road is paved. You know, it's an opportunity for people to see the pretty countryside, too.
So have either of you ever ridden in the event?
I'm always working it.
Well, this is my first year.
This is her first year, so, yeah.
Okay. Is there, so can people donate money, like, on the website, or do you have to come into the office?
No, they can do it right on the website. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Do you have a target goal for the amount of money you want to raise this year?
Again, we'd love to have 200 people show up. The other neat thing is if people bring in $275 in support, so they can create their own fundraising page. If they bring that in, they get a riding jersey for free, which is very cool. It's very,
very nice.
Cool. So, but we would love to be able to put our roof on the next house, which we're going to start later this year in St. John's. We would love to be able to have the funds available from this event to be able to put the roof on that house. So,
how have you seen the event change over the years? Has there been a lot of growth in the event? Have there been, you know, different mix-ups with the course or different ways that it has been run throughout the years? I mean, what have you seen since the beginning of this?
I would say the biggest change, obviously, now is the courses change every year because we don't want to give people the same ride every year. You know,
Yeah, right.
So we're actually going into Gratiot County this year, which is something that we've never done before because Clinton and Gratiot merged last year. One of the neat things I would say is the evolution is we've seen fewer 20-mile riders and a lot more longer rides. So last year we had a little different, you know, because we have to do the courses. So we had a 75-mile. That was our largest ride. Mm-hmm. That was the most sought-after ride.
Really?
It was the 75-mile. Yeah.
A lot of people are way more ambitious than myself.
Me too. I'm telling you. Like, I don't even want to do something fun for that long.
Yeah. There's also a dad and daughter duo that did the 75-mile last year, and they're planning on doing the 80 this year. They already pre-registered, so we were making their bags this morning.
She has been, father-daughter has been going, this is our eighth year. I think they've been doing it at least 7 years, and I think she's probably 11. Mm-hmm. So she started out as a rider, and now she's doing her own
bike now.
Yes,
that's very cool. That's very cool. So did you guys come up with this idea in your department specifically, or was it somewhere else in Michigan? Or
no, it actually came from, like I say, staff that was part of Habitat Lansing at the time, mm-hmm. where they were seeing other bike rides happening in the Lansing area, and they said, hey, let's try that. That sounds fun. And so we merged. It made more sense to merge to do that because we had more opportunities, because Lansing was, a lot more congested. Mm-hmm. So people got to do a ride in the country. So then when Lansing bowed out and decided they didn't want to do that anymore several years ago, we've been doing it in Clinton County and now Gratiot as well. So it's just really kind of fun. Mm-hmm. We love spending time with the riders when they come back. We also have to mention that not only do we have the best rest stops and the best cookies, we have a great lunch planned. That's part of the registration fee, is that mm-hmm. we get a great lunch. We also have Creative Wellness, who is coming and doing massages afterwards.
Very nice. That's
so
very important.
That is very cool.
It's a huge part of the recovery process.
Right.
Any ice baths or anything afterwards?
You would think we should, right?
Maybe next year.
And Jim Geyer has promised good weather, so that's a good thing.
We'll take him at his word hold him to it.
Right.
So I think that we're about out of time here on the show, but thank you, ladies, for joining me. And thank you for this wonderful T-shirt. They presented me with a Bike to Build Habitat for Humanity T-shirt. It's really nice. It's the wrong colors, though. It's blue and yellow, but I think we can work around it.
Right. And Morgan created those. Our fabulous intern, Morgan, created those, and I think they are really smashing.
You've done a wonderful job.
It was pretty fun, so I've had a great time here.
Good. I'm glad you guys are enjoying it. Would you ever participate in the race if you had the opportunity to stop working?
I would do the 20-mile. I would really love mm-hmm. to be able to do it. One year, I keep saying I'm going to have it all planned so that I can go and ride maybe next year.
Well, good luck to you guys with your event. It sounds like it's going to be fantastic. We are about out of time here on Current Sports. My name is Ian Hawley. I've been filling in for Al Martin. Have a good week.